All right, I'd like to introduce Ron Manderscheid, who on some level needs no introduction. He serves as the Executive Director of the National Association of County Behavioral Health and Developmental Disability Directors. He's currently Adjunct Professor at the Department of Mental Health, Bloomberg School of Public Health, Johns Hopkins, and President of the Academy ACMHA, the College for Behavioral Healthcare Leadership. We're really honored to have him here. He's a leader in national public health, mental health policy, and practice, and I'm so happy you're here. So go ahead.
So several things on introducing the Affordable Care Act. How many of you are involved in some activity on the Affordable Care Act? So what kinds of activities? Joe?
I've been doing amicus briefs.
Excellent, excellent. Okay, somebody else over here. Somebody over here. Yes. Excellent, excellent. So every one of you should raise your hands. You should all be involved in this. This is very, very, very important. So a couple of points of introduction here. And all I can go through here kind of is the ACA light today. But points of introduction. ACA is very compatible with the major initiatives of the American Public Health Association. The major initiatives of APHA focus on the social and physical determinants of health, prevention and promotion, and reducing social inequity and social inequality. The ACA is a major device for doing that, basically. And if you went to the presentations on Sunday and heard Michael Marmot and others, it's very obvious that the ACA is a tool for reducing social inequity. Point two. You need to distinguish problems of the website from the goodness of the ACA. There are other people who want to bring this all together and mesh it together so you don't understand this. So when you hear lies about the ACA, you really need to speak up and bring clarity to the situation, basically. So all is not lost because the website has glitches. The website had 15 million visitors in the first 10 days. I just was on a conference call 15 minutes ago where we were talking. 15 million visitors in the first 10 days. So why is the website malfunctioning? It's partly malfunctioning because it has way beyond its design capacity. So you need to all be involved in this. So let me go ahead here. Several things as resources. I have an article that is an overview of the ACA. You can read my 10 pages of crib notes, or you can read the 2,300-page Affordable Care Act, and I know which one you will choose. So if you want that, give me your card, and I'll send you the link. I also did several pieces to explain several of the major things. So I did a piece on the marketplace. What is the state marketplace? How does it operate? When did it start? Who can enroll in the marketplace? How does the marketplace differ in a state that's doing or not doing the Medicaid expansion and so on? So again, 750-word piece. You can read it in 5 minutes, basically. Another one, same thing. What is the Medicaid expansion? How does it operate? Who can enroll in the Medicaid expansion? What is the federal government paying for the Medicaid expansion? How does this vary if your state is not doing the Medicaid expansion? So one important point on this is in states that are not doing the Medicaid expansion, right now there's 25 of those states, people between 100 and 133% of poverty will be built into the state marketplace. So about a third of the people who would have been covered through the Medicaid expansion will get covered through the state marketplace. A lot of people, I think, don't know that. And then a third piece, I also did a piece specifically for consumers. So if you have this document, you can literally go to the 800 number. If you're hearing impaired, there's a number there. There are links in here where you can literally go and enroll. You don't have to go to the website to enroll. You can go to the 800 number. You can go to a health insurance navigator. There are many routes, many doors for entering the house here. So this basically was written for consumers themselves. So if they have this in their hands, they can actually go and enroll. So all of these resources are available, and I'll be very happy to share them with you. So what is the current situation? So I told you 15 million people showed up on the federal website. The federal website is being done for 36 of the state marketplaces. Some of the other situations in Kentucky, 20% of the uninsured have already enrolled. And in Oregon, 10% of the uninsured population has already enrolled. And obviously, the state marketplaces that are being operated through state websites are doing better because they don't have 15 million visitors, basically. Five basic features of the Affordable Care Act: insurance reform, coverage reform, quality reform, performance reform, and IT reform. And I'm just going to go light over these things today here. So the intent on insurance reform is to provide insurance to 39 million people, 20 million people through the state marketplaces, 19 million people through the Medicaid expansion. We believe, based upon prevalence data we have from the mid-2000s, that about 11 million of those 39 million people who are, in fact, people who already have a behavioral health condition. That's a prevalence rate among the 39 million people of about 30%. Very high number. And these are the people who've been using emergency rooms. These are the people who've been getting their care in the local jails, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The mechanism for doing this are the 50 state health insurance marketplaces, all of which are up and running now. And for the Medicaid expansion, there's Medicaid expansion in 26 states and in D.C., so we're about halfway there. The bells and whistles here on the Medicaid expansion, 100% of the cost will be paid for by the federal government, 2014, 15, and 16. And that will decrease gradually to 90% by 2020 for every enrollee in the Medicaid expansion. Don't let someone tell you this is going to bankrupt the state. Not true. Another falsehood here about the Affordable Care Act. The marketplaces, everybody between 100% of poverty and 400% of poverty will receive a federal tax subsidy. That subsidy will not be paid to them. That subsidy will be paid to the qualified health plan in the marketplace. If you're between 100 and 250% of poverty, you also will get reduced copays and deductibles on your care. And the average value of the federal subsidy for 2014 is about $5,200. So there's a tremendous advantage in enrolling in this insurance. The federal tax subsidy is pegged to what's called the silver level of insurance. So if you buy the bronze level, you'll buy cheaper insurance and you'll get a higher rate of reimbursement in your federal tax subsidy. Essential health benefits, very important here. We thought the secretary was going to issue an essential health benefit for the United States, where it would be the same in every state. That did not happen. She said every state should develop their own essential health benefit, and there are a lot of bells and whistles on that I don't have time to go into today, but two important points. The essential health benefit must include mental health and substance abuse, and it must be at parity. So if you live in a state and you look at your essential health benefit and you don't believe it's at parity, write a letter to the secretary saying that. Don't leave it just hang out there. Secondly, the essential health benefit also has a prevention and positive health promotion component in it. So as we go forward with this, there's going to be a much bigger percentage of our healthcare resources spent on prevention and promotion as opposed to disease care. So you all are from behavioral health care, going to have to get your head around the idea of working with people who don't have any behavioral health condition going forward. So the grand challenge here for us, grand challenge, how are we going to enroll these 11 million people with behavioral health conditions? And today is a very good day to start doing that. Moving then into the issue of coverage issues. The ACA eliminates pre-existing condition clauses in health insurance, as well as annual and lifetime limits, and extends family insurance to age 26. Everyone with a mental health or substance use condition has a pre-existing condition. Right now, no one has, and beginning actually on September 23rd of 2010, no one under the age of 19 with a pre-existing condition could be excluded from insurance. On January 1st of 2014, that will be expanded to the entire population. She'll be able to be 108 years old and have a pre-existing condition and not be able to be excluded from insurance. Amazing for behavioral health care, because you all know about redlining that's occurred here. Everybody up to the age of 26 can remain on their family policies. That's very important because half the people coming out of college these days do not have jobs. In the old world, when you got to age 22 and you left college, you were dropped from health insurance. No longer too. About 3 million people enrolled in that. No annual or lifetime limits on health insurance. So you all previously had at least a $1 million annual limit and probably a $3 million lifetime limit on your health insurance. That's all gone, basically. And on prevention and promotion, no co-pays or deductibles. So if you have prevention or promotion elements in your insurance, there can no longer be any co-pays or deductibles. So here the grand challenge is, how can you spread the word broadly that we have your back on these issues in the Affordable Care Act? I would dare say the majority of those 39 million people don't know these basic facts. Third element here, quality improvement. The ACA provides for the creation of integrated health homes. And there were a number of presentations yesterday, including the Carl Tobe awardee, who talked about integration. We are moving into the era of integration. We've had two generations of integration. Generation one is treat, refer. Generation two is bidirectional integration. Generation three is going to be full-bore integration of services and full-bore integration of money. And we need to prepare for that. That's going to happen in the next 5 years. The ACA has provisions to extend health homes. Section 2703 of the ACA creates state Medicaid plan amendments to create health homes that will be operated by accountable care organizations to provide health home services. Some states, like Oregon, are already well into this. Yes, we got. The only other thing I would add here from this overhead, those health homes and the accountable care organizations are going to be driven by quality measures eventually. So it's very important that we pay attention in our behavioral health field to our quality measures and where we are in that particular work. So the grand challenge here, how can we foster the development of health homes and accountable care organizations without many of our provider organizations disappearing along the way? So I would stand here and I would predict a third of our provider organizations are going to disappear in the next 5 to 10 years, because they're going to be unable to make the transition from the way they currently receive their money to billing using insurance mechanisms where you bill person by person. And they're going to be unable to make the transition as we move into integrated care, because unless you're proactive in that and do that, you will be left behind, basically. The primary care world is already moving ahead, could have a long discussion of hospitals and federally qualified health centers and rural health centers doing this. We need to be engaged in that. We need to prevent these third of our organizations from disappearing in the next 5 to 10 years. The ACA provides for performance-adjusted case rates and capitation rates. Another whole topic can't really go into other than to say we're going to move from fee-for-service to case rates first. Case rates are per person served per year. Capitation rates are per person covered per year. And in those systems, management of the benefit will become internal. There won't any longer be external management of benefit. So the grand challenge here, mental health and substance use care providers will need to self-manage insurance benefits under these systems. Whole big issue for us here. Finally, IT. The ACA assumes that you have IT. It doesn't assume we're going to give you money to build the IT. So it says you have the IT, you have electronic health records, you have personal health records. We're going to give you a bump in your money for using those records well. So if you report your federal performance measures, using your IT, you'll get a bump in your Medicaid payments. If you use those medical records to train people in medical schools, you'll get a bump in your Medicaid payments. The problem with behavioral health care is we aren't at the table on this. So again, another topic I don't have time to go into. We have two bills. We have a bill in the House. We have a bill in the Senate right now to extend the HIT legislation to behavioral health organizations. This is not controversial. It's supported by Republicans. It's supported by Democrats. Everybody believes you can save money if you have HIT. We need your support in getting those bills from where they are right now out onto the dockets of the Senate and the House before the end of the year. So if you're interested in that, I'll send you a link so you can know the bill numbers and who the co-sponsors are and so on. So I'm going to stop at this point and see if there are any questions or comments here. I don't know where we are on time. Do we have a couple?
We're good on time.
Good on time. Yes, please. Well, then you, so basically, you, so the question is, what if you don't have an electronic medical record and you can't get the money to do it? Well, there are several answers to that. One answer is we need to get these bills passed and try to get the money. Another answer is if you don't have one, join another organization that does. So go to your local county hospital, go to your local general hospital, go to your local federally qualified health center and work with them. Buy into their electronic health record, so you are part of that. The issue will be what electronic health record they have and how good are the behavioral health elements in the electronic health record. So all is not lost if we don't get these bills, but it's important to act on this, basically. Yeah, please.
In estimating the 30% mental health substance use disorder in the population, it seems in other studies it's 10-12%.
Okay, so I'm not talking about the total population. I'm not talking about a prevalence in the U.S. population. I'm only talking about a prevalence in that uninsured group of 39 million people. So why? One reason it's very high for behavioral health care is because of those 11 million people, about 60% are people with primary substance use conditions. Why are they there? They're there because they have been excluded from Medicaid since 1998. Beginning in 1998, people could no longer enroll in SSI, Supplemental Security Income, or Social Security Disability Insurance, and then go on to Medicaid or Medicare if their primary condition was substance abuse. That was stopped. So you've got a pent-up prevalence in the community that's untreated. In the substance use world, there are about 23 million people a year with this issue. Only 10% of those people get treated in the current system. It's about 2.3 million get treated, basically. Yeah.
That is super useful. Thanks for that talk. One of the things that you put forward, I think, is that we should be armed with the facts so we could.
Absolutely.
And not in the untruth. I wonder whether you could comment on whether the facts are the only thing we need to respond to the untruth, or do we need some sort of a strategy to dispel the untruth that's independent of the facts?
I think you need all of the above, and so to add to the facts, I think you need social justice arguments. What is the social justice argument? The social justice argument is, do you value all people equally? Most people will not have the gall to say, no, I don't, even if they really don't. Most people won't. So if you get over that point, then you can get to the next point. So if you say, Franklin Roosevelt said everybody ought to have the right to have good health in the United States. It ought to be a basic human right. If you say that, then you go to the next step. Do we value all people equally? So if everybody's going to have the right to good health, how are we going to get there? And if you can get there, then say, I absolutely have to support things that move that agenda. That's why the APHA has the agenda it does, to move the social justice agenda, basically. And so you can go through those kinds of arguments, which are value arguments, before you ever get to the facts. And those arguments actually are more compelling than are the fact arguments, in my view. Anybody else here? final question in the corner here. So that's always true. And so we're going to have to pay particular attention in behavioral health care to what's going on in rural areas. And I would include in your comment looking at what rural health centers are doing, not only what rural behavioral health entities are doing, but what rural health centers are doing, and then how those centers are being helped by extra federal funding to do some of these things so behavioral health care can plug in. So I always encourage behavioral health people, talk to your federally qualified health centers. Talk to the rural health centers. Talk to your local hospitals who are doing this. Get plugged into what's going on there. Get plugged into telemedicine in rural areas. Get plugged into the Economic Research Service of the USDA, which also puts providers out into rural areas. There's whole sets of things we need in this field to be doing to plug ourselves in so these third of our organizations don't disappear in the next 5 to 10 years. Okay, thank you very much, Chair.